Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
That border terrier is so ugly, and yours is actually beautiful. So I'm really happy that there's glamour on this walk. All people listening are border terriers. My book is still a really great read.
This week on Walking the Dog, I took Ray out to meet radio host, journalist and Newsnight presenter Emma Barnett. Full disclosure alert, I've admired Emma from afar for a long time, mainly because she's an incisive, forensic and rigorous interviewer, but also a tiny bit because she's got massively strong hair game. There's just one problem with the fabulous Emma. She doesn't like dogs. I mean, really doesn't like them. Did I bring her over to the dog side? Well, you'll just have to find out by listening to our walk, which took place in Regent's Park recently. I actually think you'll adore Emma. She's bright and thoughtful. She's also a real laugh. And we chatted to her a lot about her new book called Periods, It's About Bloody Time, which I found kind of life-changing and really important. And I think you should buy it for a woman or man that you love. In fact, just buy it for anyone. It's brilliant. I'll get it for my dog even. I'm off now to leave you to listen to this. I hope you enjoy it. Here's Emma.
Ray, come on.
Okay, coming right now. Let me turn this off.
You see, this is the thing with Emma Barnett. Always on that phone.
Off now.
Are you always on the phone?
Have we started?
Well, I'm not very professional.
Is there, a klaxon?
Like, I don't so answer the question, Minister. Is it there we should go?
To the park, yes. Yeah.
There is
an entrance.
Is there a square here? I don't know if it's one of those private squares.
I feel like on a dog walk we need a park, not just a square. Not a sort of private enclave.
Oh, you're a better dog owner than me.
I am.
Not even a dog owner.
I'm in that really awkward position where you know that I don't love dogs.
I know.
And I'm now trying to do that really British thing of overcompensating to seem like I've not said that publicly. But what I actually mean is I don't really like terrible dog owners.
Okay.
Because I wouldn't let my baby come and lick your face without your permission or touch your food.
Yeah.
But really annoying bad dog people who think you should just love their dog in your space without permission, that's really what I'm talking about.
I think it's also, you see, this is the thing about Emma Barnett. I haven't even started on, we're already in the throes of a really interesting debate. And I haven't even introduced her. I'm with the very wonderful Emma Barnett, journalist, broadcaster, author.
I know.
Because I'm going to talk to you about this, but I've just read your book called Period. Is it It's About Bloody Time?
Yeah, that's the strap line.
And it kept me up all night, as did my period. So we're going to be talking about that. But I am... welcome to Walking the Dog, by the way.
Thank you very much. Hi, Raymond. That was your name, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
You're trying, but I'm not.
Raymond's got a very good barnet, and with my name and my hair being what it is, thick and furry.
I think Raymond's hair is a bit like, do you remember in Dynasty? You're probably too young for this, but there was a character called Jeff Colby.
I know exactly what you're talking about.
He looks like the hero. He's got like that sort of...
But also in Star Wars.
He looks like an Ewok.
Yeah.
And that's who George Lucas based them on. Was Ewok, was Shih Tzu.
Gosh, today I'm learning an awful lot.
So yeah, you were talking about dogs that when people foist their dogs upon
you. That's the problem.
And I would agree with that, which I think is manners, because I think you have to operate under the assumption that no one likes dogs, and then you'll be all right as a dog owner.
I think the better entrance... Actually, no, we can do this.
We can do this.
Yeah, to the park.
Do you know what? Even though I knew this was the better entrance,
yes,
I was immediately going to just do what you said.
Really? I'm sorry about that.
No, don't apologise, but I realised already immediately you're the girl at school that I would have thought, oh, I'm just going to, I like her, she knows what she's doing.
Yeah, but I also would have corrupted you if you were good, so don't worry about it.
I wasn't.
We still would have done well, but just about kind of thing.
Were you? So I want to know about you growing up. Did you have dogs? You grew
no.
up in Manchester,
no dogs. We had a parakeet.
Exotic.
We had things you could keep in cages because my mother also doesn't like pets.
She's not a dog person.
Slash anything that's wandering around, sniffing its own arse, licking its own arse, making a smell, molting and interfering with curtains or other things you have to keep clean.
Yes. But you know, you tolerate men and that's fine.
I don't think of men like that. Not the ones I live with. And I live with two boys now, a little one.
Oh, yeah.
And a big one.
So tell me, so you didn't have dogs or
no,
cats or anything
no.
like that. And did you ever think, you had the parakeet though, that's fascinating.
Yeah, I'm an only child, so I probably should have wanted some kind of pet, but no, I was fine. The parakeet was distinctly 80s looking, with the hairdo. It was named Michelle after my mum, which she wasn't best pleased about, because they had the same hairdo.
Yeah.
And before that we had the very innovatively named Birdie Barnett and Lady Barnett, who were two budgerigars. And then when they died, we had Birdie Barnett 2 and Lady Barnett 2. So then the parakeet came and lasted quite a long time.
Oh, so you were more of an aviary than a kennels family.
Yeah, that's never been said to me before, but yes.
And what are we passing a group of school children?
We are. Hello.
Ray plays very well with that.
Oh my gosh, that girl was wearing a jumper that said, I'm a cat, but I thought
Hello.
It said... I thought she said...
Oh, don't worry.
I thought she said, I'm a twat.
What does it say? I'm a cat.
I'm a cat. Never mind.
Are you going to go
Maybe
home?
You should get her on your podcast. She's better suited to this.
Look, no dogs except guide dogs. No, that's not true. Oh, off the lead, it must mean. Hang on, Emma, this is strange.
This is my kind of park.
But it's not no dogs in this park. I've been in this
Do you know what I think it is? It's
what?
This part of it has got art.
Oh.
It's got
well,
some
go
kind of freeze
bit, then, shall we?
Art fair. Well, you could probably walk through and then
shall
get to the
Shall we go through?
We,
I can carry
I
them
bet
while
that's
we walk
the problem.
Through.
But this is my it's kind of park. No dogs.
I'm going to check. And look, it says no ball games. The two men clearly... Oh, no, they're sweeping. Okay.
They're gardeners.
I call them sweeping. It's interesting, that only child thing, isn't it? Because... people talk about it a lot. Did you know, did people refer to it when you were, you know, say, oh, are you an only child? Did you ever feel other because of that?
There's a moment, I think, when you say to somebody, they say, oh, you know, have you got a sister, have you got a brother? And you say, no, just me. And they go, oh, you all right? You all right? And I'm like, yeah, I'm great, thanks. Like, I can't mourn for what I didn't have, you know. There's a real worry that you are okay. And I was okay. I mean, I do think there are downsides, definitely.
Yeah, what do you think those are?
I think I've highlighted them to mainly be, isolated them to be
yeah.
over the years. One, obviously if your parents are unwell in any way, or my mum, for instance, has Crohn's disease and doesn't feel great, it's just you to shoulder that, especially obviously when they get older. I also think I'm... much more of a fan of one-to-one conversations. I'm not as good in a group as some people because I'm used to living in a quiet house,
yeah.
a relatively quiet house. There's not lots of mayhem when you're growing up as an only child.
Yeah.
You eat with the adults from an early age. So that's a bonus, I think. You actually are a bit more mature, perhaps, and into adult conversation a bit earlier.
Yeah.
But I don't do very well at that sort of table where everyone's shouting over each other and no one's really listening properly. And I think that's why I love radio and ultimately podcasts, because it's that one-to-one connection.
Yeah.
And it goes into people's ears and you know that they're really listening because it's very focused and personal. So it's definitely a downside that I remember when I got to university, I was so overwhelmed. I mean, I was an outgoing person, but I was suddenly living on this corridor, you know, with 12 people and everyone's screaming at each other in halls. And I was like, hang
Isn't
on.
That fascinating?
You know, and then I lived in an 8 and it was never quiet, obviously. So that's definitely a downside.
I think that's really interesting, actually. I'd never thought of that. And I suppose someone once said to me, who was an only child, that they found conflict resolution with friends and things a bit harder because they hadn't had that experience of, they hadn't been forced to sort of do that on a daily basis, to sort of argue and fall out passionately and swear and scream
That's
at each
interesting.
Other. And then say, I mean, not with adults, it's a different dynamic with adults, but with a contemporary, another child, to be able to say, okay, we're friends again now. So I don't know if that's something you find, or are you good at conflict resolution?
I think I, now you've said that, I think I can see what they mean, and I think I'm okay at it, but I think that's because my mum was an only child, so me and her, we're not like siblings, we're not those terrible mother and daughters. Oh, she's my best friend. I hate that. She's your mum, right? And that's just how it is. Anyway, but I do think, because we both get things off our chest, we'd rage and then we'd make up very quick.
Yeah.
So I think I almost had that experience through her. And my husband, who, you know, first coming to meet the family, Manchester family, and he's from London, so Northerners. I mean, his socks were blown off by how brutal we could be to each other and then be fine 5 minutes later. So funnily enough, in my case, I'm not sure it was quite the same.
I'm going to let Ray... I don't know if I'm allowed, but if someone tells me off...
Well, we could do...
There's another dog there, Emma. I think it's fine. Come on, Ray.
You're just being a bad dog owner, right?
Do you think so?
Well,
it looks empty.
As soon as other people...
Do you think he's all right? Look at him. He looks like a rabbit anyway.
Yeah.
Come on, Raymond.
Stay away from me.
Come on the link. Emma. We're going to change your... You know what's going to be tricky? You say this.
Yeah. And am I going to hold the lead?
No.
Okay.
But your
I've never
son,
done that before.
Your son is going to meet... want this dog one day and that's going to be tricky because all children are obsessed by my dog.
Are they?
Yes, because look at him, he looks like something out of Jim Henson film.
He is really cute, but I still don't want to live with him.
I feel that about a lot of people. I mean, I feel that about David Beckham. He's really cute. I don't really want to live with him.
Yeah,
I might feel insecure. Come on, Raymond. And look how he walks. He's so slow. He doesn't bark.
No.
He doesn't shed. If you're going to have a dog...
He doesn't look like he'll turn on you, no.
Turn on you? Look at him.
Well, you never know what's going on in their heads. That's the other thing.
Yeah, but you don't know what's going on in human beings' heads.
Yeah, but we're equally matched most of the time.
Are we? And he hasn't learned... And he's not capable of any dark arts trying to conceal his motives.
How old is he?
He's, Oh, look, he knows... He's being a bit... He's... 3 in December.
Oh, she's quite young.
Yeah, he's 2.5.
Right, he's a toddler.
Yeah, he's a young child. Oh, look, that's a Border Terrier. He's like a 1940s dog.
I'm quite happy because that Border Terrier is so ugly and yours is actually beautiful. So I'm really happy that there's glamour on this walk. Look at that dog, it's rank. Obviously, to all people listening.
Can we use that as the trailer?
Maybe. All people listening are Border Terriers. My book is still a really great read.
So tell me, that's interesting about, because I had that, I became an only child later and unexpectedly in life because I lost my sister. And what I would say to you and any other only children is that in a way, you know, that thing about, oh, you'll have to care for your parents. You know, we all know things, life's what happens when you're making other plans or whatever. I lost my sister, and so I've had to learn how to be an only child.
That's interesting.
And when people ask me, I think, well, it's just me. And then I think, oh, do I say... But it wasn't always just me.
Well, I mean, on a serious note, lots of people I've interviewed who have lost people, let's say they've lost a child, and there's a woman I interviewed recently, and I said, how many children do you have? And she said, 5. And only later did it transpire 4 are living. But she always answered 5 because she has.
Yeah.
She gave birth and has 5 children. So I think, you know, you don't always have to say the other bit first, do you?
Well, do you know what? I've got into the habit because I decided that it was... I used to do that. I remember, funnily enough, a journalist asked me once and he just said, oh, have you got any brothers or sisters? And I paused and I thought, I don't want to embarrass him. It's socially awkward. I just said no. And it took me a while to think that was a real insult to my sister because it was kind of denying her entire existence.
Yes.
And she has daughters. And I sort of thought, that's their mother. So I just say, yeah, I had a sister and she died. And it really was awful. And I miss her. And oddly, you find, and I don't say that to my insurance broker on the phone, but people just open up to you in a way that you wouldn't expect, which I want to talk to you about, because that's something I think you're always very good at in your interviews. But before we get onto your book and everything, I also want to know, when you were growing up, Emma, I mean, I look at you now, and you've turned up with this incredible blonde hair, looking stunning, and you're funny and articulate, and you're rushing around doing all this stuff.
Who are you talking about? Yeah, go on.
Were you the sort of, if it had been an American high school, you know, would you be the one in the
was
college?
Was I Sweet Valley High?
You look like one of the Sweet Valley High girls. Were you the girl that everyone, were you the golden girl?
My gosh, it's so funny you should ask this, in the sense of, quite literally on a physical level, no, because I was given photos yesterday by my old school from the archives. They wrote a thank you card because I went to talk to the girls there about the book. And inside this thank you card are some of the most hideous images that not even my family remember. I'm mousy haired with a bushy fringe on the netball team. I mean, looking like I could take you out, like an absolute bruiser. Spots, like NHS glasses when they weren't cool and still didn't look good looking back. I mean,
when they had a plaster on the
Yeah, physically, no. I didn't really, if you like, in any way blossom until quite a lot later. I don't really feel, if I'm honest, until a bit later anyway, I wasn't, because I wore glasses from the age of four, I was quite self-conscious, and then I got contact lenses and I thought, I've arrived. Yeah. Maybe a boy will look at me now, you know. So I was quite, basically quite geeky looking for a long time, if I'm honest. And then within myself, though, I did have good friendships. I do think only children make very decent, solid mates, because we don't have siblings. So you always have to bring a friend on a Sunday trip out. That's what I had to do.
And so I suppose they get to know your family well as well.
Yeah, yes. Because, they're part of it, really.
Yeah.
So I did have a good group of friends, and I did really relish school in the end. I did have a very positive experience at my school.
You were very academic, I get the impression, weren't you?
I was also very naughty, so I knew where the line was, and I went right up to it all the time. So I was that girl who was late to school because I was snogging my boyfriend next to the tree. and then I would come in and work very hard for exams and do well.
Yeah.
So the teachers disciplined me, but also quite liked me. So I felt that doing well was important to me, but also so was having fun.
Right.
And, you know, that informed quite a lot of decisions, and I left everything to the last minute and made it as stressful as possible for myself to do well at exams and do well in school.
See, I can't imagine you like that. You strike me as a very organised...
Oh, now I'm much better. But, I mean, only yesterday before doing this speech to the school, I hadn't written it, and the girls saw me outside the corridor, in the same bloody corridor I used to swat up for the last 5 minutes. I liked leaving everything so there was as much adrenaline as possible.
Right.
And I do think there's something weird about live broadcasters, and that's part of our thing, which is that we can stay calm under some of the most unusual, while someone is screaming in your ear, shit, the line's dropped, the guest isn't there, what the fuck are we going to do? And you're sat on television going, good evening. I mean, that's not a normal psychology.
Yeah, I wonder if there's... Because I know, I do a breakfast show with Frank Skinner, and I know that, especially working with comics, there's that added danger, but it's just that sense of this could go anywhere. I wonder if there is an adrenaline. It's the foreign correspondent gene, my dad used to call it. I mean, obviously, you know, out in Afghanistan, but it's that thing of I perform best when
it's slightly on the edge. Completely. You know, I'm not saying I don't do my prep, but I'm saying the context within which sometimes I put myself, the best stuff can come from me, or maybe I've just fed myself that lie, and the only stuff that can come from me is when I'm panicking. So, I mean, on paper I probably looked a bit golden girly with, you know, straight A's and all that stuff, but as a person, I quite like to push the boundaries, and I hate rules.
Do you?
Hate them.
Well, that's interesting, because that does feed into why you're so good at... Why you're not cowed in front of authority, I think it's definitely fair to say.
I think there's I think being Northern, you've got that a bit inbuilt into your character.
Do you think so?
Yeah. Especially in Manchester, you know, it's sort of, come on, let's have a go.
It's a Liam Gallagher walk.
Yeah,
isn't
that's
it?
Sort of all right. But, you know, just because it's never been done before, why shouldn't it be done? people just because you shouldn't ask that question. Why shouldn't you? I'm not saying I'm a huge rebel here.
Yeah.
But, I'm not a fan of authority for authority's sake. Not at all. And I also think...
Look at him. I'm going to pick him up.
No, it's all right.
He does this. He just stops. He's just like, oh, I don't really like walking. I like to sit down.
He's doing what good people in parks do. He's thinking, why aren't we at the cafe yet?
He is thinking that. I'll just carry him now.
Bye, mate. So I think there's that. Yeah, there's a. I think being from a city like Manchester, sometimes there's a good outsider element to it.
Mm.
And I think that's also fed a little sometimes by being a woman, and you might be the only woman in a situation.
Yeah.
And I also think I'm not a particularly religious person, but being Jewish, being part of a minority, you also have that outsider element as well sometimes. So I think all of those things combined made me think of school that I like to, and continue to, I hope, in some ways push some boundaries.
And were your family Orthodox?
Well,
or they weren't practicing?
This is quite a boring thing to explain to people.
It? I always wanted to be Jewish, though, and I'm really upset that I wasn't.
Well, I like the fact that you essentially get accused of it, and I like the fact that people never believe I am. So it's good. We could just do a life swap.
I have lied before.
Oh, my gosh. I have as well, to say I'm not.
I've lied to say I am. it's complicated to explain.
It's complicated because my mother was a member of the Reform Synagogue, which is the more chilled out one.
Yeah.
Let's try to bring some of the traditions up to date. And the Orthodox synagogue was also where she had grown up a bit. And my dad was a member of that.
Got it.
And they actually got married in both. They got two to ensure themselves on all levels.
Yeah.
It's pretty Jewish to go and get two weddings. But anyway, so I grew up with a bit of both influencing.
Yeah.
But in terms of where we went for Rosh Hashanah, the only real time we always went, it would be to an Orthodox synagogue.
Yeah.
But I wasn't Orthodox and I'm not.
Yeah. But that's interesting how that informed, as you say,
culturally,
that stuff.
Yeah. Culturally, I am.
And
I think there is something in Jewish culture, you know, again, I'm not a fan of stereotyping, but there is something about you sit around the table and you question and you debate and you talk and children are asked their opinions. And I'm not saying that doesn't happen in other households, but it is very culturally part of what goes on, because alcohol drinking isn't part of what goes on.
Yeah.
Food and conversation and debating goes on as complete par for the course every Friday night.
It's a family.
First time I'm touching the dog. Oh,
you spoke to him, Emma. How did you find it?
Soft.
Is it softer than you thought?
It's like a bit bony on his head, though.
I know.
It's quite cute, but I don't want to take this further.
Emma, I never thought I'd hear that.
I do need to really wash my hand now.
I've got a baby wipe. Would you like one?
No. Well, it may happen again, the stroke, so I'll just keep this hand in reserve.
Ray, it may happen again, the stroke. Ray's a dog, by the way, we should just say. I won't take that out of context.
Consent's important.
Not with a Shih Tzu, Emma.
Shih Tzus have rights. God, and you're a dog owner.
Me too. Me Shih Tzu.
Wait, so, we're going round on us.
Oh, well, I'm going to go on this side of you, though.
Okay.
So, you met, which again, I read about in your book, met your husband.
Yes.
When you were at university.
I know.
I'm telling you what happened in your life.
I know, but it's still almost a shock, but it's 14 years today.
It's not your anniversary.
Since we went on our first date, yeah. And I'm spending it with you and the dog.
And the dog.
In a really romantic park. It's great. He's at work. I'm with you.
What's it? What are you going out tonight? Have you got any plans?
Got a book event.
Oh, yes, you have.
But, you know, we'll say hi when I get to him. I'll have a cup of tea.
I like that you're celebrating your anniversary by promoting your book about periods. It's brilliant. It's the most feminist act. I'm really proud of you.
Thanks.
And did you feel... Because one of the things I loved about your book was that I felt it was, I think it would be really, well, I found it useful, and it was just clarified a lot of how I felt in terms of my attitude towards just being a woman and feminism and things I feel strongly about. And I wonder, was that something you always felt? I mean, I know your school had a very famous feminist icon.
Yes.
It was
Evelyn Pankhurst sent her children there.
Sylvia and you know Pankhurst. Her great-great-granddaughter?
Yeah, Helen. Dr. Helen Pankhurst, an amazing woman.
Did you always feel, what did it mean to you being a feminist growing up? Were you aware of that concept?
I mean, Manchester High, I mean, the minute you walk, that's the name of the school, the minute you walk through the door, you've not really got a choice. It's sort of like waterboarding of feminism. But all it meant to me was equality.
Right.
And that was really important. And it also meant just not believing that boys could do things better. I mean, talking back as a child, that's how I interpreted what it meant. I think when I was younger, the word feminism wasn't used, if I'm honest,
and
as much as it is now.
Mid-90s this week.
Yes.
Been, yeah.
Obviously,
Spice Girls.
Spice Girls, girl power. Although I was very disappointed when researching the book to find that the Spice Girls had turned down the opportunity to endorse a sanitary towel brand, but obviously went for Walker's Crisps, because that's girl power with a cheese and onion flavour. So there was obviously commercialised girl power going on around me, which, you know, I'm not going to be cynical about now, because I wasn't about it then. I enjoyed it. You know, I was like really invigorated by things like the Spice Girls, as well as getting some of the serious suffragette history drummed into me.
Yeah.
And I think just by dint of personality, rather than thinking there was a doctrine I needed to follow, and never really accepting, you know, jokes on the school bus about girls smelling at that time of the month or whatever it was, I used to just stand up for people and
say
what I thought. Yeah, really. Didn't find that a problem at all.
But that's,
I mean, I was nicknamed Emmeline. And that wasn't a joke.
Really?
You know, that was obviously based on old Pankhurst. I was hardly sacrificing my life and going on hunger strike, but it was a nickname from some of the boys.
But you talk, and I find that interesting, about, I suppose, blossoming physically when you were older. And I think sometimes that can be a real gift, because I think what happens is you can, and you touch on this a little bit in your book, or you quote people who do, about you can get trapped in that notion of your identity as a woman being very tied up with being attractive and being sort of set desirable, I suppose.
Yes.
So that means that you're less inclined, I guess, to call out bad behaviour, or because it's not likeable.
Yeah, I mean, I've said this, and I try and actually say this to younger women quite a lot if I get the chance or opportunity to talk to them. I developed a talent at being disliked. And it's quite hard to develop, but I did do it. And working at a newspaper, my God, that helped.
Really?
It's a tough environment.
Because that was your first job when you...
My first job was actually
digital.
On a magazine called Media Week.
Yes.
As a business reporter, and then I moved to the Daily Telegraph. But my point being is, when a woman goes for something, there's this thing called the dominance penalty. And if we really want something, or if we say something, we're difficult, we're shitty, we're bitchy, we're annoying. If a man goes for it, gets promoted or congratulated a lot of the time. So
yeah,
I just sort of, I think, again, maybe the whole thing as well, being an only child, you just think, well, I don't need you to like me.
Yes, yeah.
I don't need you.
Yeah.
And you don't mind being on your own in a situation.
That's interesting.
So...
because you're more self-sufficient, perhaps. So,
exactly.
Look at that. That'd be a nice date for Ray, that pigeon. He looks similarly happy to just...
If I ever wanted to change away from live daily broadcasting and had thought about nature as a career, this walk is confirming I wouldn't enjoy it.
Do you not like nature?
No, I love walking and nature, but the way you just stop to look at that fat pigeon that looks like it's on its last, I don't... I'd be more interested in painting this, because this looks
like
Constable.
Don't you think this looks beautiful?
This
though?
Is beautiful.
We should describe it.
We're standing at a
lake. I'm going to take a picture of you, because you look a bit like a sort of Botticelli or something, I feel.
I'm not sure. I got compared to a milkmaid recently, a Thomas Hardy milkmaid, which I wasn't sure about either.
Oh, you look lovely. I'm going to make you have Ray in the picture.
I think the scene is lovely, not necessarily me. Hi, Ray.
You're trying so hard.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
I think your career probably doesn't seem like it to you. It feels like, God, this has taken forever.
Yeah, but I've been there every day.
It's, to me, it seems like, oh my God, this was like in a 3-year period.
Ray.
I felt, come on, Ray. I'm going to pick him up. I felt like I was just so super aware of you suddenly in terms of...
I do apologise.
No, but you were on... I think I first became conscious of you when you were on LBC...
Right, on a Sunday night.
Yeah, and you were doing sort of quite late shifts on
yes.
that. And then it was just like, oh, okay, she's on 5 Live. And it just seems, it was Newsnight most recently, that was this year, you became a regular
yes.
co-presenter. But what do they call it, team, I suppose?
Yeah, well, there's 3 of us on the
stable,
presenting team.
I call it, yeah.
Yep. The damn fine fillet.
No, not because you're
winning. Emily Maitlis.
I mean that in a boxing way. but it feels like you were just absolutely born to do this job, Emma, to me.
I mean, isn't that weird though? Isn't that always the way when things come along and it sort of just works? People go, oh, you were meant to do this. But actually, I did study politics at university, but for the first...
Is it Nottingham, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. First 7 years of my career, I never touched the stuff. I was writing about technology, I was writing about media, I was writing about lastly to do with women and feminist issues when I did the women's section at the Telegraph. And obviously that intersected with politics,
yeah.
especially when I started doing shifts on Woman's Hour.
Yes.
But it wasn't like the hardcore Westminster stuff. And then that just became part of my daily life the minute I joined 5 Live daytime. And I think precisely because I'm not a Westminster correspondent, because I'm not a lobby correspondent, as we call those journalists with the parliamentary passes, I ask questions that I hope are being shouted at the radio at home. I'm asking the question, I hope, that a listener wants to be answered.
Mm.
And I won't move on until I think we've got a comprehension of the answer.
I know you won't.
But not in a sort of performative way. Because it really doesn't happen in most of the interviews. It just, I mean, the ones that people remember, they remember because then it maybe goes viral because of how many times they've tried
like
to...
the Jeremy Corbyn interview and there was... But it was interesting, when you interviewed Theresa May, which was a real coup to get her...
That one was, yeah. I mean, I did a since where we did like a phone-in, but the first time I did it was a coup because it was the first one after her general election.
Which was failure. Did not go well.
Yes.
And she'd lost her majority and... It's one thing that really struck me when I saw that. It was a radio interview, but obviously I saw it on YouTube. But it was, I think it was probably the best interview I've seen with her because there was a humanity to her that I hadn't encountered. I had never seen her and, you know, she admitted, she said, I cried, didn't she?
Yeah, I mean, she didn't want to admit that. That was quite an amazing moment in the sense of a human moment because you're sitting in the Prime Minister's office, which, by the way, has this fantastic gold-plated sign on the table that says Prime Minister, just in case she forgets.
Like a Disney
and at times
film.
She may have forgotten because it was so difficult like to win a majority on anything. But I did make that joke to her. She didn't laugh.
Did she not?
No. I was like, do you need that? Anyway, the thing with her had been she was constantly being interviewed by those Westminster journalists.
Right.
In that run-up. She'd done other sit-downs before.
Yeah.
But they, I'd just seen the last one she'd done had been with, I think it was someone from Channel 4 News.
Yeah.
And they were asking the right questions fully, but they were just... And they weren't given the context. I was allowed to sit with her for 20 minutes or so. But they did just go, Prime Minister, how do you feel to have lost the election? Now, I don't know about you, but if someone asked me that question in that way,
yeah,
as the first question, admittedly, they only had a few minutes with her, I don't think I would answer it in a way that could give any insight on a human level.
Yeah.
So I just tried to actually think about the way into the interview and that admission, which she actually didn't want to give because she said I was very upset or whatever, and I said upset enough to cry.
Yeah.
And you could have heard a pin drop in her office. And she looked at me and it was kind of this moment where she thought, and I knew it as a woman especially, where she thought, if I say yes, I'm going to look weak.
Yeah, yeah.
But if I don't say how I actually was, and if I was upset enough to cry, I think the fact I've even left this pause where Emma's even having these thoughts and I'm having these thoughts, it's obvious I probably did. So her answer was this kind of perfectly cringy but brilliant complex response where she went, yes, one tear, a tear, I think she said.
Yeah, yeah.
Because then it was at least she said, I did cry, but not that much.
Yeah.
And so, you know, everything was bound up in that. And it was in the first 4 minutes. There were real highlights to the rest of the interview, but no one will ever remember them because that's the bit that travelled. Like the bit where I asked her, are you a feminist? And then followed up with, well, how can you be in bed with the DUP party who advocate anything but feminism when it comes to bodily rights like abortion?
Hmm.
So, you know, there are other parts of that interview that were much more robust. But that opening bit, I do think someone who's just called a gamble of their lifetime and it's failed, you have to hear how they're feeling.
You showed something of her which was vulnerability. And that, to me, to show a prime minister as a vulnerable figure is quite an achievement.
Well, I mean, also, she was in some ways ready to, because the first speech she'd given, she hadn't, after the election, she hadn't sounded like she'd got the result.
Mm.
She stood there and everyone was like, does she know she's lost? And it's a bit awkward. I mean, yes, they're still the largest party, but they haven't got the majority.
Yeah.
So I think she sort of knew she had to do something. But yes, we went further than perhaps she or I expected.
Did you, do you get nervous, Emma, when you're, you know, I see you, they always say, watch this, Emma Barnett skewering.
I know, the language is quite muscular, isn't it? I mean, I don't write those headlines.
Of course you don't.
The other one the other day was, if you see, watch this Emma Barnett eviscerate.
Eviscerate.
I mean, I sound like I'm going around and really harming and disemboweling some individuals.
Often as well. It's just you attempting to get them to answer a very straightforward question.
Yeah.
Which they're refused to, but do... Do you get nervous, Emma? Do you get scared? Do you think, I don't want to ask this question, they like me and I'm getting on all right with them? Or do you not have that need to be liked?
I don't care about politicians liking me, no. Not at all. But I'm not going into it thinking, I want you not to like me.
Right.
Or I want you to dislike me. I want you to hate this experience. I don't want them to dislike me. I don't want them to like me. Mm. I want them to answer the question.
Right.
I see it as a transaction, an information transaction.
Yeah.
You are paid by us. Yeah. What are you doing? That's the aim, always. And, of course, I'll think about what do we need to know that they're not going to tell us and how can I find it out?
Yeah.
And, yes, I want things to go well. I mean... there are days where the agenda is very important and very big and you don't want to not ask the right questions. So, of course, you plan and you have apprehension in the sense of, will I be able to ask it in the right way in the amount of time I've been given? You know, there's a lot of choreography, if you like, going on all the time around you. And that is stressful. I'm not going to pretend I'm really relaxed all the time.
Yeah.
Because I do...
But you do very much see it as, you know, that's something that I know women have to fight a lot. And I don't think that's because we're born wanting to be liked necessarily, but that is a sort of script that we're fed, I suppose, from a young age where girls are told you're beautiful and boys are told you're smart.
Mm-hmm.
I think you get fed this script of your job is to look good and be passive and be liked. And boys are told you need to be, you go out and achieve.
Although I wonder if it is starting to change, because I now have a little boy. But it may not... the way equality may be coming along the tracks might not be perfect either, in the sense of boys now look a lot more at Instagram and see hench figures. I was only reading the other day about a boy who sadly took his own life and he was always saying how weedy he was.
Yeah.
And there were these Love Island muscular... Zeus
yes,
figures.
You're right, actually. That's true.
I'm not saying that the message is totally transferred, that boys are...
Yeah, it's an unfortunate equality.
Exactly.
In a way.
It's a weird equaling out in this messed up society.
You mentioned your little boy.
Yeah.
And that brings us onto your book, because obviously it's about periods.
It is.
You can't avoid that it's about periods.
No, I don't wish to avoid it.
Well, I'm glad that you called it that. But you talk when you're writing it during the book. You mention that, you know, you're pregnant at the time of writing it, and you say, "Well, sorry, I'm actually not having my period."
Yeah, I'm having a really good break from it. And then I have the baby while writing it, and I have an attempt at a breastfeeding career.
Yeah.
And so I also don't menstruate during that time as well. So it was ironically the longest amount of time since starting my period I hadn't had one. But there we go.
Did that slightly inspire you to write the book, do you think?
The gap?
No, just the when you conceived and when finally, because you are very honest about that it was a journey and a struggle to get there, because you'd struggled with your periods all your life, hadn't you?
Yes, and I eventually, while trying to get pregnant and failing to get pregnant after 2.5 years, I got diagnosed with endometriosis, a very painful period condition, which has impact on fertility. So we ended up having IVF, and that's when I always say, you know, my luck came in, because it is luck, and we were able to conceive. And I had really started to accept that, you know, I'd written in my diary, I only write a diary when I'm miserable. God, it was a full diary for 2.5 years. And you know, because lots of people, just going back to your point about women and success, lots of people had said to me, "Oh, you don't want babies yet because you're doing so well in your career." And I thought, fuck you. All I am doing is trying to get fucking pregnant and you've got 3 kids. Just fuck off. Yeah. And actually someone who had said that to me emailed me once they had heard about the reality and said, "I am so sorry. I assumed you were too ambitious for children."
That's the next too ambitious for children.
Credit to her for apologising.
Yeah.
So anyone listening, by the way, if you think women who are doing well and don't have children didn't want them, I'm not saying all of them do or all of them did, but I bet your bottom dollar quite a few of them just couldn't get pregnant.
Yeah, you just don't know people's stories, do you?
No, you have to be so careful. Yeah. I had basically been fobbed off by doctors for years. For 20 years, having seen them, you know, and they just told me I had bad pain and to go and take some paracetamol.
Yeah.
And I felt really embarrassed because my job was to try and get answers out of people for a living, and I had not been diagnosed with something. And I do think our relationship, this is a slightly separate point, but with the NHS, lets us down at times because we're so grateful to it.
Yeah.
And we're so happy to be seen. And we treat doctors like gods, which most of the time they really are. That we don't ever question them or push them in the way that we might in other relationships in our lives. And certainly if you had private healthcare, which I didn't, I think you almost demand answers in a way that you don't with the NHS sometimes. But that's a slightly separate point. It still didn't detract from the fact...
Although, it's separate, but I do think also you make this point as well in your book... Which, if I haven't said, I absolutely love, by the way.
Thank you very much. It's really weird that people have started reading.
No, I know. Does it feel odd?
You must have felt that when you put yours out in the world.
Yeah, I just felt really odd. I thought, oh, it felt... That's so kind of you to read this weird...
You actually read it?
It's like they've read my diary or something.
It is.
But,
Well, yours very much.
Like. Yeah, I know. Mine's... But I did feel that... I do feel, and again, this is something I got from your book, that it's something that women are less inclined... I think women are less inclined to raise issues to do with menstruating and periods because they think, oh, well, this is just this cross I have to bear and I'm born with it and it's meant to be awful and I have to hide it and never talk about it. And as you point out, which is a stat I'd never even considered, it's 25% of your life, essentially, which is terrifying, that you go around in agony. Or in my case, I used to always think, oh, I mean, I'm less, but I've always had such heavy periods.
Have you?
Every 2 hours, I would have to change a Tampax. So I would think, I can't, oh God, that film's 2 hours, 20 minutes. I'm going to it's awful.
Well, I mean, there was a guy I interviewed who simulated having a period for a week. A guy called Edgar, he's like a comedian in America, he did it for BuzzFeed.
Yeah.
And they created a pack of beet juice that dripped down his buttocks into his pants. And the bloke kept leaking. And he kept forgetting to have his pad changed. And he was like, you know, I didn't even have the hormones or the pain. And he said, I couldn't hack it. And I'm not saying blokes couldn't hack it, but there is a real ritual and faff that you get used to from a really young age that is silently dealt with and not acknowledged in any way by even the person going through it.
I got the impression what you wanted to do was sort of take the shame out of it.
Well, I was trying to think, what's the opposite of shame? And to me, it's pride. Yeah. Because pride is also infectious. Shame's horribly infectious.
Yeah.
And it buries deep inside you. But so does pride. Because I went on a pride march a while ago, and I was thinking, how joyous is this?
Yeah.
And I'm not saying I need, like, us all dressed up as tampons marching through the park with Raymond thing. But
although I would love that.
Would Frank like it? I think Frank Skinner dressed as a tampon would be quite a sight. Anyway.
Well, Frank does a good thing with periods, which I think is sort of taking the piss out of the male reaction.
Right.
Which is, you know, you say a very good thing in your book about, you're sort of urging women to stop using those coy makeup bags to
yeah.
use the loo.
Just put your tampon behind your ear, mate.
I love it. Some women call it, you know, the walk from their desk to the toilet, the red mile.
All right, mate.
So I feel like, you know, it's a bit of a cliche, but there's that amazing Gloria Steinem essay from 40 yeah. years ago. I mean, it's a cliche to say, what if men had this, because yeah. it won't ever happen, but she did write this hilarious essay, if men yeah. had periods. And she's right, they would be standing on the corner of streets going, I'm a three-pad kind of guy. You know how much pain and blood I've had this week? You know, they wouldn't bother with a dainty sequined bag to go to the toilet, or whatever you take. They would, you know, and also tampons and sani pads would be free.
Yeah.
When men designed the world of work, they would have mandated, not just for loo paper and soap, they wouldn't be paying a quid out of a dirty slot machine
yeah.
for a thick surfboard nappy. It would be different.
Well, also,
sorry, we're just
like,
near a bus.
Yeah, which is why
if you can hear the sound, it doesn't sound very pastoral dog walk.
Yeah, but
we're walking up. Raymond's made it clear that he
doesn't
not up
want to
for
walk.
Walking anyway.
He doesn't like the
so
heat.
He's going to come to the BBC.
He's going to come to. He loves it in the BBC. He gets so much attention there, Emma.
Because, you know, when you bring a dog into work, it's very powerful.
Is it?
I wouldn't know.
That's an interesting thing as well in the history. There's a lot of history of that period. Like, I remember saying to my history teacher, I was genuinely interested.
Yes.
I said, what did they do in medieval times? And I remember everyone sniggered. And
good
she,
question, though.
But I was only about 12 or something. And I always remember she went appropriately red.
Yes.
And obviously thought I was trying to be cute and mischievous. And I honestly wasn't. Actually, I'm going to have some water. And she just said, well, I don't know. I suspect they probably shoved a rag up there or something. I mean, it's not relevant. And I thought, actually, I don't think I'd ever really thought about that again until I read your book.
Well,
and
the historian, Greg Jenner,
bless him, has done a bit of work on this.
Mm.
And he of horrible history's fame.
And it's quite a horrible history, this one, because, you know, poor women working in the fields would just bleed into straw.
Yeah.
And it wasn't really until the Edwardian times that most women just weren't bleeding down their own legs or, as your teacher put it, finding something to put there. And, you know, in that respect, women must have had no idea what was going on.
Yeah. And do you think sometimes...
And I think,
they
I think
thought
men
they were
would,
dying or
yes,
something.
And I think
yeah.
men would have been quite rightly appalled as well.
Yeah.
Because blood is terrifying. And in the medieval ages, yes, and all sorts of other times, you know, you're taught to fear it. I mean, the other thing to say, which someone did point out to me, is women wouldn't have had the same level of regularity to their menstrual cycles, probably because of diet
yeah.
and all sorts of differences. But put that to one side, you know, it was only when some very thrifty, clever First World War nurses, when using bandages to absorb blood of the men coming back from the front,
yeah.
then thought, I'll use them down there, that we'll start getting in business. Of
yes, I was
absorption.
So fascinated to read that. I wanted to ask you as well, did the process of writing, how did you find that? Because it's your first book, isn't it? And how did you find that compared with, I suppose, the slightly more adrenaline-based
yeah.
it environment is you find?
Was, yeah,
definitely. But did you find it too slow, or did you think, right?
I wrote quite quickly. The thing that took the time was interviewing the women.
Yeah.
And actually, interviewing the women I really liked, because that's exactly what I do
most of the time.
Yeah.
I love talking to people and I love hearing their stories. I didn't love the writing of it, no.
It's hard, isn't it?
I found it lonely.
Someone said to Jane Goldman, who's my childhood best friend, she's a screenwriter, yes, and she's a very successful one, and she, I remember I rung her, Emma, and I said, I don't like doing this, it's so hard. And she said, Em, no one likes writing, everyone likes having written. And that was a very important thing to remember. And then...
Yeah, because this bit, walking around a park with you, that's fun.
Well, this is why I do this, because I get to basically say, who do I really like and want to be friends with? I know, that Emma Barnett.
Oh, right, so this is like a date?
Yeah. This is like, I've got you here by stealth. You think, where's that interview? It didn't come out. I was meant to be promoting my book.
That fake Jew that I met in London.
Can I use that as my Twitter bio? Because David Baddiel has a Jew. I want fake Jew.
You can be my official fake Jew.
Can I be the fake Jew? So, can I ask you something as well? I saw a TED Talk of yours, which, yes, I really loved.
Right, good.
And it was a few years back, and probably when the idea, pre the book, obviously, but the idea must have been brewing. But you say why women need to be like snails, essentially.
Yes,
it's
I
about
do.
Evolving, wasn't it?
And having your antennae out for different forms of sexism that men and women have got better at hiding.
Which I love that, because you talked in it.
Go down here.
The reason I raise it is that you talked about ambition, and it was something said often of you. And when I was reading through the cuts on you, I really noticed that. Fiercely ambitious.
Yeah.
Well, what does fierce mean?
I'm eviscerating people. I'm destroying them. I'm fiercely there.
Fierce is frightening.
A lot of horrible
and aggressive.
And aggressive language, isn't there? Used about me.
But that's an interesting thing. How do you respond to people referring to you as ambitious?
Mm-hmm. Correct. It depends. Listen, it can be used in a compliment,
right,
a compliment, and it can be used as an insult. And we're not good at dealing with ambition generally in this country, never mind with where it intersects with women. It's always worse when it intersects with women, always.
Yeah.
But, you know, I just gave an example before of somebody thinking I was too ambitious to reproduce.
Yeah.
I mean, surely that's the ultimate ambition in some ways. Not for everyone, but, you know, it's an amazing thing your body might be able to do.
Yeah.
And it's an amazing thing to give life. But I think generally, like, I worked quite a bit in San Francisco when I used to cover technology.
Yeah.
And that was obviously a place where innovation was happening all the time.
Yeah.
But failure was happening all the time. And success and failure were embraced,
right,
as opposite sides of the same coin all the time. And saying you wanted something wasn't shameful. But saying you want something in England,
yeah,
in Britain, is you know, like you've
it
just done a massive fart.
Yeah. I can see that.
The other thing is,
which is why I think people don't also, that having kids thing, in a way, I think there's a coyness about that.
Of course,
it's sort of like, oh, we'll see what happens, because no one wants to say, well, we're trying and it's not working.
No, and I totally fell into that myself.
Did you? Yeah.
Because it really wasn't working. I actually didn't know what to say, if I'm honest, because I was so close to tears about it. And, you know, I'd be in Woman's Hour. It would always be at Woman's Hour I'd start my period, having just done a discussion with someone who had loads of kids.
Yeah.
You just want to put your fist through the studio wall.
Yeah.
And
was your partner, luckily you'd been, it sounds like you have a good relationship, so.
It does sound like that, yeah. No, we do. We do, we really do. And he was brilliant during this process.
Is he quite like you? Is it, when I say like you, like.
Hi, children.
Hello, yeah. Children.
Just talking about. Yeah, Xiang.
Do you see what happened with Ray and the dog? Did they say Xiang?
Yeah. Bit French for you,
they loved. Well, in this smart area of town, they're probably British. They say, oh, let's speak French today, darling. Do you think when you bring up, you've got a little boy, haven't you?
Yes.
And do you share the childcare with your, I mean, obviously you have to have help.
Yeah, we have help.
Yeah.
We have good parents.
Do
very,
you? Yeah.
Very involved.
Yeah.
Love going for coffee and cake at all times. And we have each other, and we are, yeah, we both work, and we're like shift workers together at home.
Yeah.
Now my husband didn't lose faith during the fertility.
Really?
I don't know how he didn't, especially as I kept saying, it's never going to happen. And I'm not still quite sure how he didn't, but I do think weirdly, because it is the woman getting the period each month.
Yeah.
Getting the email from your body.
I like that.
It's just not happened again. You get that moment on your own in a toilet somewhere.
Yeah.
That's truly crushing. And I'm not saying it wasn't hard for him. It really was. And I remember very clearly we went to a friend's child's first birthday and everyone at the party was pregnant, it seemed. And I've never been in more of a funk, if I'm honest, because I didn't like myself during the period. I recently did a show with a lot of women, a live programme, most of whom were still having IVF and it wasn't successful yet.
Yeah.
And I did that deliberately because we always hear about it when it's been successful.
Yeah.
There's lots of people where it isn't, endlessly. And I did say at the beginning of the programme, which I think you can only say if you've been through it. Here's my producer, Claire. She had three children naturally. Don't you just hate people who can have sex and make babies? And it worked. And they all went, yes. And I was like, yes. That's the boyish bit of us, personality, all in unison. That's Schadenfreude and lies within us all.
It's so... Well, look, here's some more children. Look, Ray's going to go down very well with them. Look, Emma.
I am going to have to make a call to these people because
yeah,
they are going to think I'm not coming.
Why? No, let's go now. Aren't we near them?
We're late.
How late are we?
2 minutes.
No, let's get...
They're quite militant.
Which salon is it?
It's just the blow dry bar.
Where is it, though? Is it there? No, why are we so late? I think what
Hello?
We should...
Hello, I've got an appointment now. My name's Emma.
5 minutes.
And I'm literally just 2 minutes away, so I just wanted to tell you I'd got stuck.
It's my fault.
All right, bye.
No, they're all right. You dealt with that very charmingly.
We'll see.
It's fine.
We'll see.
So tell me, are you... Do you get emotional? Like everyone gets emotional, but would you say you're quite, you know, do you cry? Are you a crier? I'm asking you the Theresa May question now. What makes you cry?
Yeah, I mean, I cried at a really cheesy film last night.
Did you? What was it?
Ali Wong's done a film on Netflix.
Oh, yeah.
Like something like Maybe Baby or something. But I love Ali Wong. Have you watched her comedy?
Yeah, I know. Yeah, I know exactly.
So anything with her, I'm watching. So I had a bit of a thing at the end of that, knowing it was so cheesy, but I had to. I do get emotional.
Do you cry at work? Because there's a lot of stuff around that, isn't there?
Well, I mean, when the Manchester Arena bomb happened and we went to Manchester, went back, and for me to sit there as well, that was the place that always, I saw the Spice Girls, I saw Lauryn Hill.
Yeah.
I'm not making it about me, I just meant I had a real history in
connection,
that particular
yeah.
building. And my first gig was when I was 11.
Yeah.
And you just sit there and you feel like so helpless talking to the bereaved and talking to people who were there and the emergency services. I mean, I did go off and have a big cry afterwards.
Did you?
I didn't cry on air.
Yeah.
I don't believe I've cried on air yet. I mean, I've got...
Brexit's not over yet.
I've felt it. Yeah. Cry any minute now during this traumatic dog experience.
It's not. Look, can you stroke him again?
You've had to carry this dog.
Yeah, but he's so light.
You need a dog carrier.
Will you just stroke his head? How did you find that?
Bony.
Yeah, but it's so soft, Emma.
Your dog is particularly glamorous.
Do you know? I think we're getting there with you.
I think we're further along than both of us thought we would be.
You see, I think what you are. You're an adjust the sales person.
I'm a what?
Rather, you know, you get optimist, pessimist, and then people that adjust the sales.
Yes.
I think you adjust the sales. Is that fair?
Yeah, I'll take that.
People often say the no nonsense, like you do an agony column, which I love in the Sunday Times.
Tough love, yeah?
Oh, tough love's great. But also it's interesting because you talk about yourself personally, and I think there's an empathy, which is why I think as an interviewer, when you're in a political arena, I think empathy is quite a killer skill. It's quite a killer quality to have, to be able to draw on it, I think. Because it's not expected, you know, people...
Politicians are human beings. It's not that I don't see them as such, but what you've just made me think, and I've not actually thought about it like this before, is it's the only interviews I do, because I do many other types of interview.
Yeah.
It's the only interviews I do where my empathy isn't with the subject of the interview. It's always with the people who are affected by what they decide. So my empathy isn't with you as the minister, whereas so it's displaced empathy.
Yeah.
That's a very intelligent thought you've just helped me have.
Yeah. Well, but it's true because so you're coming at it. Yeah, from the point of view of the person, as you say, affected by the decision.
That doesn't have the funding.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, you're there!
Let me say, hi, it's Emma, I'm here, I'm
sorry. Can I just say, it's this dog's fault that she's late.
Oh, is this what happens? The dog gets you out of stuff?
The dog gets me out of a lot of things.
The dog wouldn't walk, so we had to carry the dog.
I had to carry the dog, I'm really sorry.
See, the dog gets you out of things.
Emma's arrived at her hairdresser's now, and I really love it. I'm going to start coming here. I'm stealing her life. I want her hair. It looks like that. Emma, give me a hug, please.
I'm just going back in.
Oh, will you give Ray another stroke?
I'm not kissing him.
No, you don't have to.
Ray, it's been real.
He doesn't kiss on the first day anyway.
It's been real, mate.
Is he better than you thought?
You are a princess of the dog. And for that, I respect the dog.
Sorry. I really hope you enjoyed listening to that. And do remember to rate, review, and subscribe on iTunes.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.